Activist Radio is on the air.
You have tuned in to the Mark Harrington Show, sponsored by Created Equal.
Mark is training a new generation of leaders
to take on the culture of death and win.
You don't like abortion, don't have one.
The only thing that can be said to be objective truth is that there is no objective truth.
It does come out in one piece. It comes out in one piece.
I would argue that we certainly are not all created equal.
And now, here's Mark.
Why was former President Barack Obama in Germany this morning? And what can that event tell us about how we should defend babies? Hi, my name's Seth Dreyer. I'm sitting in for Mark today on the Mark Harrington Show. Now, long before I got out of bed this morning, long before I poured my first cup of coffee, followed by my second cup of coffee, and even my third cup of coffee, long before that, there was an event overseas which happened that I think has some pretty big importance for us today, especially as we consider how to defend babies. Now, perhaps like me, if you're like me, maybe you did not know what was happening. I didn't know of this event until yesterday. I was driving in my car and I heard about this thing called the Kirchentag in Germany. And that's the gathering of the German Protestant Church Council members. And they're having an event this happened today, and it's continuing on for a while, of special importance because they're celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation later this year. But they were having an event, and I was struck because I heard they were inviting former President Barack Obama to speak. Now, interestingly, as they were discussing why they were inviting Obama and what the event was about, there was a council member named Circa Gendis. And Circa Gendis, as she was discussing the event, she gave a reason for why they were having the event. Let's go ahead and look at scene one. Let's look at the image of the article of what they were doing. The event, as Circa Gendis said, was because apart from the confessing church during the Holocaust, she said, the Protestant church did not play a laudable role in National Socialism, in fighting National Socialism. So Circa Gendis said, that's why lay people said we need to create a forum to help ensure that something like that would not happen again. In other words, to paraphrase, her goal, the goal of the Kirchentag with their event, is to prevent the complacency that stopped many German Christians from helping their Jewish neighbors. They wanted to stop that from happening again. So they invited President Barack Obama to speak. Now, I hope you're catching the irony here. They invited our former president to speak about how the church was complacent during the Holocaust, in order to help people today not be complacent in the face of injustice. Now, I was struck by that because I thought the irony here is too strong. We know, I'm not going to review this morning, this afternoon for us, President Barack Obama's record. That's not our point. But we know that there were many things President Obama did during his tenure, not only as president, but also as state senator in Illinois, to fight against efforts to protect babies. That is, he thwarted efforts to protect humans. And now he's speaking about how the church was complacent during the Holocaust. For me, the irony was just too strong. But what I found particularly interesting, though, was perhaps somewhat previewing what he was going to say today in Germany. President Obama spoke recently in Chicago, and he said that we need to help young people break down barriers which prevent them from being active in efforts of public service and helping people. And I thought, really, he's onto something here, because President Obama does have a really important point here, a point that he made again this morning in Germany. And that's that there are often barriers that prevent people who should be helping others from actually doing what they should do to help others. These barriers could be many things, but as I was listening to the fact that he would be there reflecting upon his message to break down barriers which prevent us from taking action for our neighbors, I thought, well, what are the big barriers? What are the biggest reasons which prevent us, those who oppose the killing of preborn babies, what are the biggest barriers that prevent people like us, you and me, from taking action? Because a lot of times we know it's wrong to kill babies, but we kind of sit and think, well, what can we do? We don't know what to do. We don't know how to get involved. There are barriers sometimes from preventing us to taking action. And so today, I want to talk today about what I think is one of the biggest barriers. And that's we lack confidence. Because really, we've been backed into a corner, a defensive stance where the culture said, you intolerant, you're bigots, you are people who hate women, you're misogynists, you belong in the corner, you don't have a seat at the table, you shouldn't be here discussing human rights because, frankly, you're against human rights, they say. Now, we know that's wrong, we know that we stand for human rights, but too often we buy into that idea that maybe we shouldn't be at the table, maybe we shouldn't be in the marketplace of ideas because maybe our message isn't that strong. So today, what I want to do is build confidence, break down that barrier. One of the biggest reasons that we don't engage in the battles, we lack confidence because, frankly, we lack the message. We don't know how to communicate the case against abortion. And today, we're going to do that, review the case against abortion and discuss how anyone, you, me, any one of us can begin immediately defending babies in simple dialogue. Now, that might seem like a very banal way to begin fighting against abortion. But if we're not fighting for the babies in daily conversation, we won't be fighting in even bigger ways. So I admit this might be a small place to begin, but it's a vital place to begin. Everyday conversation, everyday dialogue. So let's first review, what is the case against abortion? What is our reason for opposing abortion? It's because it is a moral crime. It is wrong. Let's throw up on the screen number two there. This is the basic case against abortion. It follows, this is a logical argument. You don't have to memorize this, but this shows you why abortion is wrong. First, it is wrong to intentionally kill innocent human beings. Second, elective abortion does do that. It intentionally kills innocent human beings. Three, therefore, we know abortion is wrong. So now I'm not suggesting you walk out tomorrow, go meet your neighbor at the mailbox and say, hey, how are you? By the way, it is wrong to intentionally kill innocent humans and launch into that argument. But first, we want to understand in our minds what is, get that argument into our minds, and then we can learn how to explain it to our other people. But as you'll see there, my emphasis was upon abortion being wrong because it intentionally kills innocent humans. Some people immediately say, well, hey, no, you're missing the point here. Abortion is much more complex than that. It's not merely about the rightness or wrongness of killing fetuses and embryos. It's about women's rights. It's about women escaping situations of injustice like rape or incest or abusive partners. It's about more than just the moral wrongness of killing babies. Now, I think we have to be very clear here. When women are in unplanned pregnancies, there are complexities. There are questions like, who's going to raise the baby? Will they raise the baby? Should they consider adoption? Financial questions, questions of their schooling, their normal livelihood. Yes, there are questions to ask, but the moral question, whether abortion is right or wrong, rides only upon the one question in that argument, which is it right or wrong to kill babies? And clearly, I think we know it is wrong. Now, I want to kind of demonstrate that, though, because some people might say, okay, I'm still not tracking, though, because it seems like abortion is far more complex than merely it being wrong to kill babies. So when I hear that, as Created Equal, what we do, we go on the streets and then create conversation. When I hear people say things like that, I just say, well, let me tell you a story. And there are so many tragic stories we could tell to communicate the point here. But one that happened just last year communicates quite vividly the reality that abortion is wrong because killing innocent humans is wrong in spite of the circumstances. Now, let me tell you that story. Last year, around Christmas time, the day after Christmas, my family and I, we jumped in our minivan, we turned on some holiday tunes and went over the river and through the woods to, of course, to grandmother's house, right? But as our day, that day on December 26th, as that was filled with anticipation and hope for us, there was a nightmare unfolding for a family in Pennsylvania. Because in Pennsylvania, if you would look at article, the second article, side number three, you can see this story that happened in Pennsylvania last year. A mother was found dead in her house, but not only was she dead, her son was dead as well. Her one-year-old son, John, was found dead in his crib. Now, what had happened? The police came, they determined that Sherry Schirmeier, the mother, had suffocated her son in his crib with a pillow, and then had taken her own life. She shot herself. This was a great tragedy. But the question was, why had she done this? Sherry had posted on Facebook the reason for her actions. She wrote on Facebook, publicly addressing her husband, "You are a nasty man. I'm tired of being ignored physically. I'm tired of being emotionally abused. I'm tired of it all. You will never see your son again. You don't deserve to have a son." Sherry posted that on Facebook, then went to suffocate John and take her own life. Now, as we reflect upon this tragedy, there are questions to ask, like, how could we have better helped Sherry to prevent this tragedy? Were there systems of support in her community that were missing that could have helped her? Those are important questions. But if you ask, was it wrong to kill John? That's not a complex question. It was wrong to kill her one-year-old son, John, not because of any circumstances, but merely because he was an innocent human. And it is always wrong to directly, intentionally kill innocent humans. And so we can, yes, there are other questions to face with the abortion issue, like, again, the questions of finances and things like that. But we know it's wrong to intentionally kill innocent humans. Killing John, the one-year-old John, violated that principle. And killing innocent humans and preborn embryos and fetuses also violates that principle. So again, it is wrong to intentionally kill innocent humans. Elective abortion does that, and thus abortion is wrong. This may seem simple. It is a simple argument, but that's because the moral question really is simple. It was wrong to kill John, the one-year-old, because he was human. It's wrong to kill fetuses and embryos because they're humans. That's it. That's the case we have to make in the marketplace. But now, once we understand that case of why abortion is wrong, some people might kind of push back with you, and they might say, well, how do you really know that the embryo is a human? That's a question I get a lot. So I want to take you to Ohio State University, where I was having this conversation with a man on the oval there, and I was asking him about when life begins, because I had given that argument I just gave to you. He challenged me and said, well, we don't really know the fetus is human, so let's go to that conversation and see what he had to say.
When do you say life begins?
That's a good question. It's a philosophical question that everybody has to answer, because it goes to what you religiously believe. It goes to different religions. It goes to people's different beliefs.
How do you know those blades of grass are not humans?
Because they're grass.
Correct. Is that a philosophical question, or is that a scientific?
That's a scientifically objective question.
What about a fetus? Is that a scientific question? Is it human, or is it a philosophical question?
I think it's both.
But whether or not it's human, can't that be determined scientifically?
There's debate there. You can ask if... I can't answer that question. You have to ask, because you'll have a scientist that'll say a fetus is human. You have a scientist that'll say a fetus isn't human.
What if a scientist told you the grass is human? Would he be right or wrong?
There's scientific evidence that it's not.
What about scientific evidence when it comes to when life begins?
There is no scientific evidence. There is no question about grass being humanity. There's way too many views in the scientific community, and if you take religious belief out alone, there's too many views in the scientific community, just in science, that does not know when life begins.
Now you'll see, as you saw in that video, we face some confusion here. We just talked about a pretty simple, straightforward case. It's wrong to kill innocent humans, and the fetus is a human. Some people will respond by saying, well, we don't know if they're humans or not. Or this young man said, scientists don't agree. As Amherst professor Hadley Arkus has said, the absence of consensus does not mean absence of truth. There was once dispute about the shape of the Earth, right? Some people believed it was flat. Well, actually, I recently tweeted that today we all know the Earth is not flat, and suddenly the Flat Earth Society challenged me on Twitter. I guess they still exist. I didn't really know they were around, but they are, and they started challenging me on that. But I think we generally understand today that in spite of previous disagreement or current disagreement on the shape of the Earth really is not flat. We know there is objective fact, objective reality. And when you say the fetus is a human, you're making a point of objective reality. You're saying, it doesn't matter what you believe. What matters is what is really true. The fetus inside a woman isn't a feline or a canine. It must belong to some species, and that species is the same species as her mother. So she is a human being. Now, again, this is not just my opinion. That young man was trying to confuse the issue by mixing philosophy and science. Now, I'll be honest here. There are two questions. One is scientific and one is philosophical or religious. The first question, is the fetus human, is a strictly scientific question. The second question, is that fetus equal to me, or are all humans created equal, or are all humans persons? That's philosophical, that's religious. I will be entirely honest and tell you, I'm a Christian. And so as a Christian, I do believe God made all men in his image, and so I believe in human equality. But whether or not the fetus is human, that's not a religious question. Just like whether or not I'm a feline, that's not a religious question. It's a scientific question. Religion and philosophy come with the second question. Do we all matter the same way? And that's what that young man was confusing, that Ohio State University student. He was mixing the questions. If a scientist tells you, like I asked him, if a scientist tells you a blade of grass is human, they're wrong. And sometimes I've on campuses we've gone to, I've held up leaves and I've asked people, is this a human being? And they admit, no, you're right, that's not a human, because like us, they agree there is objective reality. So you saw on the screen there a couple of the references to embryologists today, scientists who have studied the beginning of life and who make the case that from the very beginning of fertilization, we have a distinct living whole human. Just to give you, to summarize a couple others, one on the screen that you did see, I'm sorry, was Drs. TVN Prasad and Keith Moore. In their textbook, used on campuses across this country, in their textbook, The Developing Human, Clinically Oriented Embryology, they say that a zygote is the beginning of a new human being. Human development begins at fertilization. That's not 6 months into the pregnancy. At fertilization, that's when human life begins. Or Dr. Jerome Lejeune, you see on the screen, he says it's plain experimental evidence that a new life comes into being, a new human comes into being at fertilization. That's huge. We're not talking about Seth's opinion, Mark's opinion, created equals opinion, President Trump's opinion, anyone's opinion. We are saying it's plain experimental evidence that after the sperm and egg fuse, we have a human being. Now, so we know it's clear that the embryo, the fetus, is a human being. And that's why if you think back to our argument, it is wrong to kill innocent humans, intentionally do that. Abortion intentionally kills innocent humans, thus abortion is wrong. We've answered a pretty important question. People may say, how do you know it kills innocent humans? We've just demonstrated they're humans. But some people will say, well, how do you know abortion kills them? This might seem like a shocking question, but it's one that we have to answer. And one thing I think we can do when people ask you, how do you know abortion kills? Is go straight to the abortionists themselves. There are abortionists in America today who are very upfront. They know that abortion kills. Like abortionist Curtis Boyd, he said, am I killing? Yes, I am. I know that. Or William Rashbaum, who he once in an interview was talking about this nightmare he had of trying to abort a baby that was clinging to the walls of her mother's uterus with her fingernails. He said, I spent a lot of years learning to deliver babies. So sure, Sometimes it hurts to end life rather than bring them into the world. He admits he's ending lives instead of bringing them into the world. Or Warren Hearn, the well-known abortionist, who says that it's now obvious we've reached a point in the technology of doing abortions that there is no possibility of denying an act of destruction by the operator. He says it's before one's eyes, the sensations of dismemberment, he says, flow through the forceps like an electric current. Or Lisa Harris, the abortionist in Michigan, who once wrote an article about doing abortions while she herself was pregnant. She says she was doing an abortion and she had her forceps severing a leg from the baby in her mother's womb while at the same time her own child in her own uterus kicked. She said, I held a foot in the teeth of my forceps while I felt a kick of a foot in my womb. And tears, she said, streamed from her eyes. Harris, an abortionist, concluded, there is violence in abortion. Now, these are not anti-abortion advocates. These are people who are doing abortions, who admit abortion kills. But even then, maybe we shouldn't take their word for it. I'm going to show you the abortion procedures, which is graphic. What you're about to see is how abortions are done. We're going to begin with a dilation and curettage abortion, number 5. And this procedure shows you how abortions are done most commonly in the first trimester. The cervix, which is always tight during pregnancy until birth, is first forced open. The cannula is inserted and suction is applied. Now, what happens when you apply suction to something very soft? It's ripped apart. And as the baby is ripped apart, she dies a slow death. That is the most common procedure in the first trimester. Clearly, that distinct living whole human is killed. Let's go to the second, the most common in the second trimester, the dilation and evacuation abortion procedure. In this procedure, again, the cervix is forced open. This time, instead of a cannula, no suction, instead, a grasping instrument is inserted. The abortionist, like Lisa Harris says, will grab a body part like a leg, sever it from the body, rip it out. Grab another part, sever it, rip it out. All the way until the last thing you have to grab is the skull, the head. You crush that and pull that out as well. The Association of Gynecologists and Obstetricians of Canada recommends, while doing this, they recommend the operator use a crushing, rotating technique to prevent bone spicules of the baby from lacerating the mother. Because, again, there is violence happening. Clearly, the child is harmed. The mother may be physically harmed as well. Certainly to say nothing of the emotional harm or the spiritual harm. Abortion clearly kills. So we know, again, if we agree to the principle that it is wrong to kill, to intentionally kill innocent humans, clearly abortion does that, because we've seen they are humans. We've seen that what is happening is clearly killing them. So we know that abortion is killing these innocent human beings. But now some people, they'll say, okay, I'm tracking with you. I understand. Yeah, the fetus is human. I admit abortion kills her. But they'll say, it's different. Just yesterday, my team and I were on the streets in Columbus, Ohio, creating conversation about abortion. And one person admitted that life may begin at fertilization, but they said, till that child is born, she's not a person. And they've created this distinction between humans and persons, asserting that not all humans are persons, which is a pretty outrageous claim, but not a new claim. We know over time, if you look throughout history, many civilizations have stripped the rights of personhood from certain people groups who are either in our way or have something we want. In America, we know what happened with the African Americans. The Virginia Supreme Court decision said that the African American is not a person. 1881 American Law Review said the Native American is not a person in the eyes of the law. And as recently as the 19th century in Britain, Britain common law said that women were persons when it comes to pains and penalties, but not persons with rights or privileges. Or certainly we could look at the Holocaust, where the German Empire said that the Jewish human, I suppose I should say, is not a person, they said. Like you, I know that Jewish people are people, just like every other human being is a person. They create these arbitrary lines saying someone different than me, a Jewish person, their ethnicity, their religion, someone who is different than me, ethnicity, again, African-American, their differences make them not a person. This we know today in civilized 21st century America is wrong. And yet we are doing the exact same thing with preborn humans. Let me demonstrate how. We know they're human beings. Again, I've just shown you the scientific evidence, but people say they're different than us in some way, and those differences justify stripping them of their personhood. Well, what are the differences? I admit there are differences between preborn humans and born humans, but I always, when I talk to individuals, I say, yes, there are differences, but why do those differences matter? So let's review this morning together, in the last moments we have here together, what are the differences between preborn humans and born humans? And do those differences really matter when it comes to our personhood, our natural rights, like the right to life? Well, like I said, there are only 4 differences. You can remember them by following the acronym SLED. Stephen Schwartz, in his book from decades ago, The Moral Question of Abortion, Still Relevant Today, he was the first to identify in this way the 4 differences between preborn humans and born humans. Again, they follow this acronym, SLED. First, size. We know the preborn human is smaller than born humans, right? I remember years ago, I was in high school. I watched for the first time video of abortion victims, and I was frankly horrified. I went to my job at McDonald's where I was a cashier or working at the register. And I told my manager, I said, "You'll never believe what I saw today. Humans being killed by abortion." She said, "Oh, Seth, that's only when it's far too late. At the beginning, it's just a little egg. It doesn't really matter." For her, size made that human not a valuable person. Size. Second level development. Yesterday, someone told us, well, they're not conscious. So if they don't have consciousness, they can't really be a person, because persons are conscious people. They can sit and watch the Mark Harrington Show for 30 minutes. They can go to school. They can log onto Facebook and share the Mark Harrington Show. They can do all of these things. Level of development. Now, I asked the individual yesterday, well, why does that matter? How do you know that consciousness gives you value? But we'll get to that in a moment. I'm demonstrating first how they say the difference matters. They say level development, or maybe the fact the baby can't go to school, can't read books, those things. She hasn't developed that ability, makes her not a person. Third, environment. There is no clearer case of how society points to environment as a line of importance than the Kermit Gosnell trial years ago. I mean, people were shocked by what Kermit Gosnell was doing. Even those who do not oppose abortion were ostensibly shocked, right? They said what he was doing was wrong. Why? Because he killed babies outside the womb. If he had killed the same child 2 minutes earlier inside the womb, they wouldn't have cared. They say environment matters because persons don't exist inside other persons, and therefore the baby inside the mother can't be a person like you or me. Lastly, dependency. They say persons are independent beings. They don't depend upon other people. Thus, that fetus can't be an independent person. So when I hear people say these things appeal to these differences, I say, yeah, you're right. Those differences matter. But then I ask, I'm sorry, I don't say that. I say these differences exist, sorry. But then I ask, do they matter when it comes to our personhood? And in fact, I can demonstrate that they don't matter. How? Look at a newborn child. Again, John Schirmeyer, who died in his crib when his mother smothered him. How is John different than you or me? Well, he was smaller. Anyone who knows me in person knows I'm not very tall. I'm not a very tall man, and yet I'm still taller than one-year-old John who was killed. Does that mean John was less of a person than me because he was smaller? No, certainly not. Well, how else does John differ from us? Level development. He did not have the ability to climb out of his crib and run away. He did not have the ability to call for help, get on the phone. He had not developed those abilities that you and I have if someone tries to harm us. Does that make him less of a person? No, certainly not. Or what about a one-day-old born baby who has no self-awareness? Is she not a person because she lacks that, because she's not developed that ability you and I have? No, that's irrelevant to her value. If it's irrelevant to her value, it must also be irrelevant to the fetus's value. And what about environment? John was in Pennsylvania. I'm in Ohio. Our difference of environment make him not a person? No. And again, if it's irrelevant regarding John, it must be irrelevant regarding the fetus. What about dependency? He depended upon his mother in ways that I certainly do not. Did that make him not a person? No. And that's how we know these differences: size, level of development, environment, and dependency. They are all irrelevant when it comes to human value. And so we know that elective abortion kills innocent humans, and those humans who are being killed are no less persons than you or me. Because if size determined value, then the newborn would not be a person. Or any man like me who's shorter than some other man would not be a full person, or at least be less of a person than him. But these differences are irrelevant. And that is how we can go with confidence to the marketplace of ideas, because we have a winning case. Remember, our case was pretty simple. It is wrong to intentionally kill innocent human beings. Elective abortion does do that. It intentionally kills innocent humans. Well, how do we know? Scientific evidence makes it clear. They're humans. And secondly, the differences between any fetus and you or me is irrelevant when it comes to value. So if it's wrong to kill me, it must also be wrong to kill them. Therefore, we can conclude elective abortion is wrong. As a final thought this morning, I want to just share one other idea, one other thought with you. And that is that this is only one of the top reasons that we often fail to defend babies, that maybe we lack the confidence of our message. There may be another reason. Maybe we're not willing to sacrifice. And this is something I think about quite commonly with myself as I think about how much am I willing to sacrifice. But we talked earlier about Sherry Schirmeier's tragic story. Let me share with you a very inspiring story. Another mother, less than a month after what happened with John Schirmeier when he was killed, another mother faced a very tragic situation. She was cuddling her 1-year-old, her 12-day-old daughter, Kina, upstairs in her home when their house caught on fire. And what happened? Responders came to the house. They found Shelby Carter, the mother, dead upstairs, but the daughter, Kina, 12-day-old Kina, was nowhere to be found. Till someone saw something on the lawn. They saw baby Kina. Her mother had, in her last moment, strapped her in her car seat, dropped her from her window, and saved her life by dropping her onto her lawn. That mother sacrificed to save her baby. She thought, what can I do? This might take my own life, but I am going to do what I must to save my child. Our unwillingness to sacrifice might be another reason we often fail to save babies, because we're not willing to put ourselves in the line. Now, we're not facing the loss of our life like that mother did. Maybe we're just facing the loss of our reputation. Will we be willing to defend them? That's the question we have to ask. Overseas this week, today, again, former President Barack Obama was discussing how we can get involved. And he said that we must not hide behind a wall. We must not isolate ourselves in this new world we live in. We must defend the other human being. Well, there are babies hidden behind a wall, the uterine wall. Will we defend them? The choice is up to you. The choice is up to me. We know the case. We know what we must do to defend babies. But so long as we allow them to be hidden behind the wall of the uterus and don't stand up, they'll keep dying. The choice is yours. The choice is mine. Please help us all to join together to fight once and for all for the truth that every human being is created equal. See you next week.
You've been listening to Mark Harrington, your radio activist. For more information on how to become a witness against the evil plague in America, call Created Equal at 614-269-7808, 614-269-7808, or go online to createdequal.net. createdequal.net. Be sure to tune to The Mark Harrington Show next time for your marching orders in the culture war.